Welcome to the First Moves podcast. In this episode, we'll be speaking to Giuseppe Di Rosa, one of the most successful student entrepreneurs here in Maastricht. We'll be learning about how he uses Sicilian heritage and culture to build Sicilery, a restaurant which within just the span of a year has opened multiple locations across the city and ended up in the top 10 list of TripAdvisor. We'll be learning about how he uses community to build that success and what he's going to be working towards in the future. If you want to build a company based on who you are truly as a person, then make sure you listen along. Giuseppe is a fantastic example with a lot of insights, energy, and motivation to get you going. So make sure you tune along and enjoy the episode. Giuseppe, welcome. To start off, I want to ask you to tell us a bit about your background. Where are you from? Where did you grow up? And how did you get here to Maastricht?
Thanks, Stijn, and thanks, Sebastian, for having me here. It's a wonderful pleasure. It's always like very weird to introduce yourself and get people to know about your background, and you ask yourself what's important. I think in my case, it's very easy. I was born in Sicily. I have lived in Sicily until I was 17, and then I moved to Milan to study my bachelor. I did a business administration, and then I moved to Maastricht. And the funny thing about that is that I planned to actually go to Amsterdam to study, but then the UVA didn't take me, and therefore I ended up in Maastricht. And I really loved Maastricht, and I really still love Maastricht until now. So I think that that decision that I took, not on purpose, was one of the best decisions of my life. And I arrived here, I started studying before econometrics, as a research master. After 6 months, I learned a lot about statistics and PBL, which was very difficult to get used to from an Italian perspective. But I realized that pursuing a PhD was not what I was interested in that moment. I thought that I was interested in having a PhD because I like to research. I'm super curious about anything, whatever sector, especially that in a way like also mixes with economics. And from that point on, I just changed master. I did a double track. I did the sustainable finance as a first master, as a first track, and then entrepreneurship and business development as a second track. And I think that the best experience also, apart from starting a business in the Netherlands, was also working for Robeco, because after 1 year of master, I got this opportunity of having this internship in this big asset manager. I think they manage around 400 billion under management, and the experience was basically crazy. I think that we were joking before we started the podcast about how hectic it can be to have two jobs or in two different places in different parts of the Netherlands. And I think that that was the moment in which I really boosted the results I want to get, because I remember it was February 2023. I just started at Robeco, and at the same time, I have two courses of the master and the thesis to write, and we are also trying to open Sicilery. And I was like, okay, how many hours do I have in a day? If I have to work 40 hours full-time in Rotterdam, and I have a place in Rotterdam, and I have two courses in Maastricht that I need to follow 12 hours a week, and I need also to study for those courses, of course, and projects. And I have also to start sending my thesis in. How can I combine all of them? And I think in those moments, I really learned how to combine multiple things and how to act and handle different tasks, let's say. Because from one perspective, I want to really like have a good performance at the fund. I wanted to enjoy my life. I wanted to finish university and have good results. I need to finish on time with thesis. And I wanted also to pursue my dream of opening Sicilery. And thanks to friends and thanks to also, like, I think, efforts, I was able to combine all of them. But I think that I learned one lesson out of it, which is burnout. Usually no one talks about burnouts, right? Like, everyone is like, oh, yeah, everything's going so good. You know, yeah. Do you have still time? Yeah, I have still time for things. I'm like, you should not be shy or proud and not share, like, experiences like this. There were moments in which I was waking up in the morning and I was like, where's my shirt? oh, all my shirts are in Maastricht, but I'm in Rotterdam. And I don't go back to Maastricht until Wednesday. So I just went to 8:30 to buy a shirt somewhere before to get a job. Like, I had so many great experiences. But I learned a lesson that I think is very important is like that we try to do things, try to get first, try to fix priorities of the things you want to achieve. Because you cannot give same priority to multiple things. Otherwise, you will end up by either making mistakes or by, at the end of the story, prioritizing something that doesn't have really the need to prioritize.
And then you mentioned before also a bit about that dream of Sicilery. Do you maybe want to go a bit more into that? Despite all the hecticness that was around it, you want to maybe talk about what Sicilery is?
Absolutely. I think that the hectic part stopped exactly when we started Sicilery. Because when you start a business, the first moment in which you realize people like what you have planned or liked what you have produced in a sense, that's the moment where you get the most satisfaction out of it. And that boost of adrenaline that you get can make you reach whatever you want. And I think that with Sicilery, I brought also the item you asked me for later on, but with Sicilery, we started from a need that we had. At the end, maybe you start from a need that you have when you think of a possible idea. And I think that in our case was trying to challenge ourselves whether it was possible or not to do something like that. But I think that with Sicilery and with also like other experiences that we got, we learned that you shouldn't start sitting and thinking of a product or of an idea that you want to make, but everything that you try to develop should start from something that happens really to you that you're not satisfied with. So in our case, it was like 9:30 p.m. Usually Italians eat all at 9:30. And the only things that I could order were like pizza, kebab. I don't like kebab. So I was like, okay, we need to make something here. And I don't know, we were thinking of bringing your Sicilian culture. We said, you know, I want to do something for fun with friends. And I want also to link that to my Sicilian background. Because also like you have this excuse to go to Sicily sometimes. In a way, and meet my family, and do things combined. And we said, if at 9:30 I cannot order anything except for kebab, if I put something that is not kebab, there is still like a share of the market that will decide to go with that. And then we wanted to make something affordable as well. Like, it's crazy that in Maastricht, if you want to have a meal that has protein, that has also carbo, there are a few options where you can buy for affordable price. If you look also at, I don't know, Cado by Cado, which was something that I was eating when I was a student, now prices increased. So you start, I don't know, 7, 8, like that's before it was like, I think, 4.55 for the small one. And if you look also at sandwiches, like they start at 5.50 except for supermarkets, which is around that price. But for all the rest, you don't spend less than 10, 15, 20 bucks to just have dinner, for instance. So we wanted to give the possibility first for students to have something affordable, to change a bit their, you know, not even always eating a sandwich, but having something that was like also full meal. So get rice, which is a good carbohydrate, also like compared to pasta is better to eat. And then like also proteins, vegetables, cheese. So trying to combine all in one. And the product that to us reminded perfectly of this was the arancino, which is basically consumed in Sicily in tons. And in my life, I've eaten tons of arancini. And with my family, we had even like once a week, my father was bringing like 10, 12, 15 arancini to eat all together for the family. And so I had some sort of link to that sentimental connection to that product. And we started from that. Right. So I think that the powerful part of Sicilery was not 100% just the product itself, because it's something new, but it's a niche. But I think that we had two characteristics that made us, in a sense, a better than nothing business, like a good business, in a sense. And they were the first one that we started with a niche, we decided to start just for students. So our first claim when we started was made for students by students. And in this way, we started doing a bit of marketing within the university. So we started by capturing a small niche of the market, which were students, which in reality, Maastricht is not a small niche. And that's why we decided to start in Maastricht as well. And we started from that niche. And then at one point, we sit down and we were like, we're doing everything for students by students. Why? Like, I mean, why? Like, there are so many tourists. There are so many locals. There are so many people that are not students. Why are we just doing everything for students? Like, we already have the students because we are students. And that's the when we started changing all the claim, all the branding, in a sense, okay, we have to go and on a broad way and like try to capture all the shares. But before, I think with the pop-up, especially we did at SNS, everything was for students. But then after that, when we decided on starting a permanent location, we're like, okay, we have to switch this thing. And so basically, I think that we started with this idea. We had some trouble with bureaucracy, with permits, and with understanding exactly how much time and how and what it takes to open a restaurant or like a quick service restaurant in the Netherlands. And especially Maastricht is not the easiest place. I think it's the most difficult place in the Netherlands to open an HoReCa for regulation, because the municipality is extremely strict compared to Amsterdam, Rotterdam, Utrecht, or other cities. So we thought, if we can make it here, we can maybe make it everywhere.
So you mentioned that you had trouble with the permits in the municipality in Maastricht. Would you say that's one of the biggest challenges you had in starting Sicilery?
Definitely, yes. I think that it's the same of buying a piece of furniture or assembling a piece of furniture. You can do it. You can make it the best piece of art or whatever. But if you don't have where to sell it, you cannot do anything out of it. So when we started, of course, with branding and trying to understand what were our values, which items, how to make logistics with multiple suppliers work, making employee handbook. So trying to give an idea to employees how they should represent the brand when they are working and they're like selling for you. And then at one point we decided on looking for a location, right? And I think that also there you learn that there are, I think, three kinds of revenue boosters, like in a sense for an HoReCa. One is the product. So if you have such a good product, people will come to you anyway. And the other two doesn't matter, like do not matter. So the second one is positioning, like where are you positioning your store? And maybe if you have such a good product, positioning doesn't matter a lot, but sometimes positioning is what makes the product then run well. And I think that the third aspect is legal bureaucracy procedures, because sometimes you just think that you are highly educated and that you can understand how to fulfill a form or how to proceed on such a just like a request. But in reality, you then understand that it doesn't work exactly like that, and that you have still to work with locals to make local things happening.
I think there's two things. With positioning, you meant location, right? So really as to where you are in the city. And I think Sicilery has only been actively running a little bit more than a year, if I remember correctly.
I think we did around 142 operating days in 2023.
Okay.
And we did 180 in 2024 until now.
Okay,
so
gotcha.
We are a bit under 1 year, like 11 months of operating, I would say.
Right. And then to already think that you guys have now two permanent locations, that's very impressive in such a short amount of time of operating days. So I'm thinking, what kind of strategies did you use to achieve this growth? You mentioned starting out with a niche before, but what kind of came after that to help continue that growth forward?
Wow, such a good question. I would say, I think that sometimes you have to start with this statement. One said, to make more revenue, you have to have more money, or to make more money, you need more money. And money is made with money. We didn't have money. So our question was, how can we make some money without having money? And so I worked in the, I've been in the Netherlands since almost 3 years now. And I did in my first year, I worked for Thijsbets.org. I worked for the university as well. I worked then for Rebecca. And in all these experiences, of course, I saved the money. And also because in the Netherlands, you have such, they have so many subsidies that if you work and you get subsidized and you also save money, you can really like save some money in 1 year. And so I saved, I don't remember what it was, like between 7,000 and 10,000. And everything that we did within the partners was made with this amounts around. Like, so we didn't invest anything. We didn't get debt in a sense. We just basically like used some of our savings from like labor that we did to start this. And the first thing was like, can we find a location? We found one that was actually in Rotegracht 24 something, so a bit over the shop we have now. And I remember me asking the municipality to get the permit. Impossible, I cannot get the permit. I didn't know that it was so difficult at the time. And so then after 2 months waiting, like they say, hey, you cannot get the permit. And I'm like, not planned. So I don't know if you want to be, like, if, I don't know if you want me to explain all the procedure. But in a sense, it's like, imagine this. You have this zoning plan. And in this zoning plan, it says this building is entitled to have this, like, you can do this in this building. It can be a retail building. Then there are different ORECA categories. So if you want to open a business, our ORECA business in Maastricht, you have two options. The first one is you buy a goodwill. So for instance, I don't know, now you know that there is this Chile Mexican store in Onderstraat. They bought the business, and when I from the sushi place that was before, and when I'm at the meeting with the sushi place, they wanted 200k to go out, and you buy some of the inventory that they have, and of course, guys, I didn't have 200k to just buy the place to get in, and this is the first option you have. The second option, which is the most difficult option, and no one goes for it, and you can see Starbucks. I don't know if you know that Starbucks is opening in town. And guess what? Starbucks has been waiting more than 2 years for the permit. So it's a matter of zoning plan. And also, like, some buildings are extremely, they're monumental buildings, so you cannot make constructions in them. So for some stuff, it's basically impossible for you to set up an ORECA in certain buildings. So in our case, I didn't know exactly how that all of this worked. And I thought that in the building it was available, but it was not. And I think that the best thing we did was creating a network that allowed us then to jump to SNS on 1st of June 2023.
I want to switch gears for a minute, because I think when I was looking into you a bit further and also just knowing you as a friend, I think what really stands out to me is how active you are in an extent, but also how social you are with it. So you did some volunteering work, for example, in Sicily, but also with Sicily itself, you're very much focused on community and things like this. And I was wondering, how important is it for you to kind of blend these elements of maybe business and community also?
I think that I always say that I'm a people giver. What I mean by that is, I met this entrepreneur when I was, I think it was like 16, and I was coming from Milan for a flight because I did a university test in Milan. And I started talking with this person, really inspiring, like a lot of experiences. And he told me one thing, which is like, whenever you do business, you can be, there are different kinds of entrepreneurs, right? And you can decide who you want to be or who can you be. There is that kind of entrepreneur that is caring only about money, so will not be empathetic with you or will not empathize with things that happen around the business, but will care about just the business itself. So that's the priority. And then there is another kind of entrepreneur, which is for me a people giver. And what I mean by that is that to me, if you give something to someone without expecting nothing in return, you are not only making him happy and doing a great thing, and you will get rewarded in somehow in the future in a sort of positive karma, but also that person will do for you something else in the future that you don't know now what it is, but that at one point when you will have that problem coming up, that need coming up, you will make use of that moment in which you gave something without getting anything back. So it's give everything without expecting something back, but that thing will come back because people always remember of positive actions that you made towards them. So I think that that's how I blend the two things in business. And for community building, I have always wanted to, in a way, aggregate people around something. And I think with Cecilia is the idea of having a space in which you feel comfortable. And as a student as well, like in which people can aggregate, for instance, for the European championship now. And we see a lot of aggregation around the match and around being there at Cecilia watching the game. It's not that you are watching the game and that's it. You're watching it there because the community that is there makes the event itself better. It's not just going to a brewery and watching a game. It's a whole different thing because we create that atmosphere. Because when you go there, I'm setting the tables. And I'm with you. And I talk to every customer that gets in or when I can, of course. And I explain to them what's our vision. And I even ask them feedback. You know, a lot of entrepreneurs don't ask their customers, hey, what do you think of it? Because they are worried that they will say, I don't like it. And then they are to say, okay, thanks. But I mean, like, you should ask users what they think. It's the base of making a business towards success. It's like, what do people think of it? If a person tells you this doesn't work, you should follow him, change it. Don't say that, oh, you are so proud to change that because just a person told me. Because that's what makes a difference, I think. And the third aspect is making all the customers, all the community, able to make some decisions. So when we changed now the flavor of the ice cream, we asked to our community on Instagram. They answered, we act.
So we just talked about creating the community around Cecilia. How are you creating the community within Cecilia, within the team?
That's a very good question. So you have to think of it. Again, like I really like Maastricht for one reason, because it's the perfect place to beta test. You have so many like different cultures in here. You have so many people from all over the world with different, like, of course, needs and backgrounds. But also, you have a lot of turnover, or like the permits are more difficult to take because the city is all monumental, is like smaller in a sense. And with the high turnover of people that you have, usually like someone studies in Maastricht and then he leaves, or makes the master and then he leaves and goes to Amsterdam, goes to Rotterdam, goes to Spain, Portugal, whatever. Once you stay here after studying, you realize that the turnover of people getting to Maastricht and going up, it's a lot. And for employees, this becomes a problem. So what we did was, we have one small requirement in Cecilia when you work at Cecilia, which is like you need to be at least extrovert. And Italian was a requirement until a few months ago because we want to keep the brand authentic. So if an Italian gets in the shop, he can speak Italian. What I mean by that is that I encountered that many times in Maastricht. You go to an Italian pizzeria, but not to go far, you go to the market, none of the pizzeria is Italian. None of the place that it's called in Italian way, it's Italian. Like they're all either like Turkish or like Arabic in a broader sense, or Dutch even, but they're not Italian. And I can count just at the market like 7-8 places with these characteristics. So with us, we also like try to pitch that in the windows at Grodegrad. You see 100% authentic Italian taste because it's real. Like if you get in, the guy is Sicilian, the girl is Sicilian, everyone is Sicilian or Italian, which makes people more comfortable and makes the brand authentic in a sense. And we did offsites. For instance, when I was at Robeco, I learned about offsites, which is, I think, one of the coolest things you should do in a company. And so I said, how can I make offsites in my small business? And I just said, okay, we are going to go to a farm and we're going to stay together as a team. Then we present the results of the quarter and we say, okay, guys, we did this revenue. This was how many customers we have served. This was the reviews we have gotten. That's the result of the reviews. That's the benchmark we set a quarter ago to reach. That's where we are at the moment standing. And then it's all feedback. Because, and again, another thing that some entrepreneurs forget is that they listen sometimes to user feedback, right? As we said before, sometimes they struggle to ask. But the most important mistake that they make is not listening to their employees. Because those are not employees. Those must be people that work with you, not for you. Of course, they are working for you, but they already know that. You don't have to underline that. You have to underline that they work with you. Because when they work with you, it means that they will propose. And if you make their voice heard within what you do in decision-making, that's when they will say, I'm not working here for someone. I'm working here with Cecilary. And when this happens, it means that the community you're creating within Cecilary will be a strong community, which means if something happens and an employee has to work 20 minutes extra, it will do without even asking. Because it's not, oh, it's 8, I finished. It's like, it's a series still running, then I didn't finish, in a way. But I think that there we learn a lot. We had so many experiences. I think that since we started, we had around 30, 35 different employees. And some of them are still with us. So now we have two employees that are with us since 1 year, since we started, since the first location. And then other employees since 7, 8 months, and some of them are completely new. But yeah, I think this is what we do.
I was actually curious, Giuseppe, how you would react to this, because this was recently posted on the Cecilary LinkedIn. More than 20,000 eco-friendly boxes have been used. More than 1,400,000 people have talked about Cecilary online. More than 10,000 tables have been served at your stores. And more than 30,000 happy customers have been served with an average rating of 4.9 stars on Thuisbezorgd. So basically the Dutch version of Takeaway, and 4.9 stars on Google reviews. To hear those things, how does it make you feel?
I feel very positive. I mean, I think that also, I will start one by one, the things you said, right? I think that one lesson that I got out of it, and that's also in the post that you read, is that at the uni, we study a lot. We read a lot of papers, research papers. And sometimes, like, I got some questions when I was a tutor, and they were like, why do we read so many papers? I will forget them. And I was like, for sure, you will forget them. And it's the same of Leighton, right? I asked to my father once, why am I studying Leighton at the high school? He looked at me and said, you don't need Leighton for sure, but you need Leighton at the same time for your life. I was like, I don't speak Leighton, Dad. No one speaks Leighton. It was like, it's the logic. It's putting things together. It's understanding how you should act, for instance, on them in a logic way. And with research papers, it's the same. And however, sometimes in the reality, things are different. So when you think of sustainability, which was a big part of my Master of Entrepreneurship and Business Development, we try to be as sustainable as possible. But in the Orica, it's not easy. Like, we got a collaboration with Notpla when we started for seaweed packaging. At this moment now, today, since like I think 3 weeks, we stopped using Notpla packaging. Not because I don't want to use seaweed packaging. That was my innovation that I was trying to bring in the oil market once 1 year ago, 1 year and a half ago, something like that. And I think that I did it in a way. Like, I was one of the first stores to use seaweed packaging in the old Netherlands. And guess what? Dutch government made 2 months ago with Notpla a big partnership to distribute seaweed packaging in all the Netherlands. Now, Justit is selling Notpla packaging customized with their logo. So I think that in that way, maybe in a small way, we were the pioneers. But then we didn't have the same money as Justit does. So that packaging became impossible to use. The partnership with Notpla was, we start with your packaging seaweed we import from UK, but they were supposed to move their production process to the Netherlands. And they said, when once we do that, you're going to get able to customize packaging without printing 50,000 MOQ. I said, super. We wait, we start using Notpla. And then when this happened, the prices that actually I get in the Netherlands for seaweed packaging are double the price from the UK. So I'm like, there is no sense anymore for me doing it, because either I keep importing from UK with all the problems that the Brexit created out of it, or I basically cut all my margins and become a non-profit just for using the seaweed packaging. So we got back to eco-friendly packaging, which is like still recycled paper, but it's not fully organic. The nice thing about the seaweed packaging is that if someone throws that in the street, in theory, that will disappear within weeks. So I think that for the first thing, that's why now it's written eco-friendly boxes and it doesn't say anymore seaweed boxes. And in there, guys, with the packaging industry, there is a big, big issue with Arica. Making custom packaging is the hardest thing ever. Even like big brands don't use custom packaging. They just put a sticker in it. And the second thing is 1.4 million people talked about Sicily. I think that that's even low. Because in our Instagram account, we make around 35,000 impressions per month. So in 1 year, we collected, you can count on that. Just with Limburg Ain, when we did that kind of PR, we got, I think, 350,000 on Instagram and I think 50, 70K minimum on YouTube with them. And then our reels also, like the third reel we posted 1 year ago, got 90,000 views on Instagram. And in total, our reels usually, and if you count them, they collected around 300K views minimum. And it's all organic. We at the moment are not doing paid ad V. Because also Maastrichting, that is very easy to handle in a way. Like it's the, I think the city with the most effective cost of marketing, like return on investment, because it's so small that you don't need to target, or your target is there. It's like just put 5 kilometers out of your position and that's basically all the customers that will come to you, because all the rest does Tijdsbezorger and Uber. It's, they are a visibility platform at the end. So that for sure, we did the, all the marketing by ourselves. Now we are trying to get a social media manager. Like we have started working with a new one. I really like her and she works very good. So I think that I hope that we will increase our numbers. And from now onwards, we will start again with the pay.v with the new year. Also because remember, also the turnover is not from an employee point of view. It's also for customers. Customers change every year for masters and every 3 years for bachelors. So every year you lose tons of customers that you need to get back. And coming to then the tables, we did, I think, a good job at SNS. Like I remember our opening and closing events, guys, I couldn't move. There were like 500 people in line and we were like 15 minutes to the opening, there is no one. And we are desperate. It was like the first June 2023. We're like, guys, no one is coming. Like, have we done something wrong? Oh, yeah, we should have done more marketing, more ADV. We didn't spend enough money. We didn't. At 15 past six, there are like 500 people in line. Nothing can move. And the line for 4 hours does not change. It's always the same line. And it was crazy because, just to give you a small opening brackets, when we started Sicily, I think we will talk about that. We started with our own software, the proprietary software for payments and orders and stream operations in the kitchen. And of course, after like 150 orders in less than 20 minutes, the software goes down. Like, because we didn't expect this amount of orders in this short amount of time. So the database was not made for that. And I remember it was the funniest thing I've seen. That was my brother, like, behind the check with the Sicily Opera on, and was like coding on the around the table. And I was like, Giorgio, you need to really fix this. You need to really fix it. They're like, we're losing amount tons of money, and you know, like, it's our first day. But and I remember, like, 5 minutes after it was coding, and then it said, oh yeah, fix, boom. And then we started working again. But so many things happened in that opening. And I think that then we served enough tables at SNS. SNS was very happy about our collaboration. And we did a nice job there, I think, putting a lot of efforts for summer. Then with Tapain, we served as well there many tables, especially more in summer, definitely, than in winter, because it's only outside. And at Grotegrad is more about, like, takeaway customers. Of course, we have some seats inside, but it's, like, more for waiting chairs, in a sense. But I think that also there you can see our reviews. And I think that the nice thing of Sicily, and one of the strongest point, is basically customer success, in a sense that if you look at all the reviews, and I'm not kidding, like, you can really open whatever platform you want. You can go from Too Good To Go to Uber Eats to Tastebuzzer to Google Maps, TripAdvisor. Like, name one, check Sicily, you will see that we don't benchmark lower than 4.7 minimum. And on Google Maps now, Sicily Grotegrad has 5 stars. We're one of the few businesses in like Maastricht to have 5 stars still in a store, and even one of the few to have 4.9 in a sense. We are top 10 in Maastricht for reviews with both restaurants. So we are the only one that has 2 restaurants in the top 10 for reviews. Tastebuzzer as well. We were one of the few restaurants to have 5 stars until like 1 month ago. And, you know, like, some problems happened. We got like a negative review. It went down to 4.9 because every negative review you get, you delete 10 positive review that you got. So that's from a research paper. Huh? but I think that there I'm very happy. Also, we have an incentive plan for employees. For reviews. So if they collect more reviews than anyone else, they get a bonus at the end of the month. Yeah, I think that also, like, the amount of customers we have made, it's crazy. I would have never expected to make so many customers, even if our average order value is not so high. So don't think that with 30,000 customers, we have made 600,000 euro. But I think that the success was, like, that we stayed on the market with an MVP for 1 year, that we got the infrastructure built, that at the end we went well along with the municipality and got the permit. The Tapain location also is there. The students are having a lot of fun at the Tapain Casern location because they finally have a space within the campus where they can just sit and grab a drink or grab beer or grab just a soda or sit at the sun and just, like, talk to some friends or watch a European championship game or, you know, enjoy their time. Because whenever I was finishing uni, I didn't have where to go. Like, I had to close myself inside a bar somewhere, like, far from the campus. But here, finally, you have the place, like, 50 meters away. And I think that the spritz we make, for instance, is the biggest, cheapest spritz in town. So I would have loved that place if I would have been an Italian student in Maastricht, or just as regular student in Maastricht, because it's cheap, it's there. It's nice to stay in the sun, and I can aggregate with other students.
All right, Giuseppe, you just spoke a bit about the success that you guys have had so far, but I kind of want to zoom in on those really happy customers that you've had. What do you think goes into this, and why have people responded so positively to Sicily?
That's a difficult question. I'm going to go into people's mind, right? But what I can tell you is that I like that you said, oh, we went over your success. And I like to say that success is different from being successful. Like, in a sense, we were successful, but at this time, we are not, like, in a sense, like, I don't want to say that we have been successful. Like, we have tried to be successful, and people have recognized that we could be successful, but we are still far for me to say that Sicily has been a big success.
What would the definition of success be for you? Because now you say we haven't been successful yet.
Okay, I have this problem, right? I'm never satisfied. So before, I would say the difference is like between success and satisfaction. Like you can be successful, but you can be not satisfied yet. And in our sense, everyone sees Sicily as a success. And I agree with that. The execution of Sicily team has been very good. It could have been better. It could have been faster. But if you look at the results, has been doing great. But I'm not satisfied yet. Because we have still a lot of things to learn. We have still to fix a lot of things, also in the shops as well. And I think that our customers understand that, like, we're putting all of our efforts into this. And also, like, I think that the quality of the product is, in a way, always positive. So people like it. Like, they know that if they get the same item that they got 1 month ago, it's still an handmade product, and the quality of all the ingredients is the same, because we have never changed ingredients since we started. I remember one customer asking me, did you change like the quality since you moved from SNS to like a permanent location? I said, absolutely not. It's exactly the same. Exactly the same. And he said for me, oh yeah, but in this one I encountered less cheese, for instance, or like something like that. I don't remember. And that's when I love it. Because that's when you say, hey, because you forgot. It's not a commercial product. It's an artisanal product. It's handmade, which means that not every hands are the same. So sometimes a hand puts a bit more cheese, and sometimes it puts a bit less. Or sometimes the shape is not exactly the same because it's handmade. So when he made, when we made, like, I don't know, 5,000 pieces, maybe like 1,000 were like a bit smaller because the guy was feeling that his finger was not doing too good. I don't know, like, it could have happened whatever, because it's handmade. So you cannot super standardize the product. And then the customer looks at you and is like, oh yeah, you're right. You know, it's not like you're going to eat at McDonald's. It's not like we are a quick service restaurant, and I don't consider ourselves as fast food, because yes, the food is fast, but it's not a fast food quality. It's like a bit better than a fast food quality. So on that, I'm not satisfied yet, because I think that we have to do a lot still, and that we have just started. And now that I can say that we've reached 1 year, so that we produce a balance sheet of 1 year, and that we have certain assets under us at the moment, I can say that now we can start. And we can start really developing what our idea was. Because when you start with, I want to do this, whatever you thought of at the beginning will never be what you make. Because a lot of things will happen. And you will encounter a lot of times reality. And then things have to go back to, okay, what's the easiest thing I can do? So for instance, we wanted to make custom seaweed packaging. Now we have just eco-friendly packaging. We're trying to understand how to make it custom in a way. We are doing like with ink printed, like we print on the packaging. But when we started, we thought already of a custom seaweed packaging, of course. But like the time that, you know, after 1 year, I can tell you we haven't reached that yet, because you need €15,000 to make all the packaging custom. And we hadn't this kind of investment. We were not able to make this kind of investment yet. So I think that we have still like a long way to go. And I love the fact that you recognize success in to us. But I like to stand on my feet on the ground and say, like, yeah, now it's successful. What about in a month? If we don't change certain things, we are going to lose the success. Once someone says, trust is built in decades, it takes just minutes to lose it. Like, you can lose trust in 1 minute. Imagine, like, you are Dropbox, and tomorrow all your servers are down. Stop. What you have built in decades is gone just because you did a mistake. So never rely too much on success. I always tell people it's going good, but it could have been better.
And then if you're not satisfied and you're saying you're only starting now, what is the North Star that Sicily is working towards? What's the long-term vision of the company?
It's going to sound weird, but my vision for Cesari is becoming an intercontinental brand. That's what I want to do. I want the company to be an intercontinental company. I think that it's, you know, what it makes us successful is that we think that everything is possible. When I started, a lot of people were telling me, you don't speak Dutch, you don't know anyone, you're just 21, what do you want to do? All the business owners I met, they were like, oh, it's too difficult, you know, it's not how you think, it's not easy, it's not straightforward, blah, blah, blah. Everyone was telling me, just don't do it, it's too difficult, you will see, and you're getting problems, and then what about the debt you make when you're 21? You know, I can understand that most of the people don't do business at this age, because like, what the amount of things that people will tell around you is crazy. It's like, I don't know, I remember my parents at least told me 10 times it was the worst idea I could have done in my life. At one point, my father even asked me, when I was doing the three things altogether, like in 2023, it was like, Giuseppe, I'm totally unsatisfied with what you're doing. You are basically like overwhelming yourself and you have to take a decision. Either you do the research associate position at Robico or you start a company like Cesari. I said, fuck you. In a sense, like, of course, like, I love my father, but I said, like, I don't agree with you. And I said, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to prove you that I'm able to do all the things that I want to do if I put the right efforts and the right passion into it. Turns out that I was able to make them. But if I would have stopped because my father, not like a friend, and my father told me that I have to make a decision, I wouldn't have never been sitting here with you. Or Cesari would have not existed as a brand. So everyone that, like, everyone will tell you that it's too difficult and because they don't think it's possible. But that's what makes not everyone an entrepreneur. Not everyone can make a dream a reality.
Having started Cesari and not gone to success yet, as you define it yourself, but moving towards there, what advice would you give to anyone who's aspiring to become entrepreneurs or looking to start their own company at an age of 21 or 22?
Okay, I'm gonna tell you first what, like, someone else that is a real entrepreneur said, and of course it's like, I think, the most interesting entrepreneur now in this decade for me, and that's NVIDIA founder. Or media CEO, if you want to say it like that. And it basically, like, they asked him if you could have chosen, like, a different company for NVIDIA to found or, like, create a like, if you have to choose to create a company now, what would you do? Like, which sector? And it just said, I wouldn't do it. Like, because if I would have realized how hard it would have been to create a company like NVIDIA, he spent, like, I think, the last 30 years of his life on it, I would have said to everyone, like, just avoid it. I think that the problem with entrepreneurship is that you're the first one to wake up, the last one to go to bed, the last one to get paid, but the first one to pay, and the first one to get blamed when things are not going correctly. And so success is fast, but decline is slow. In a sense that when you start as an entrepreneur, you imagine, like, doing great things, you imagine, like, making people happy, money, and having responsibility, and wow. All is a wow feeling, because that's the adrenaline when you do something like that. When you're putting yourself at a glance for people to look at you and say, hey, I'm doing this. What do you think of it? And can it be successful? Yes, I think yes. But in reality, once you start, like, usually the startups for me have, like, that's again, I think a research paper, it says, like, that within 6 months and 1 year of a startup, usually the startup either fails or closes or keeps going. And the probability of it, like, failing or closing is extremely high compared to the ones that decide to go on. And I think that if that at that step, you have still the passion, the effort, the willingness to continue it, it's highly probable that maybe you would make something out of it. But if you just close, or, like, I mean, I can tell you, like, at least 3 times when we fall off closing Cesari. And every time we looked backwards and we're like, why are we even thinking of quitting? I mean, you know, like, when it was fully winter, I think it was October, we just closed SNS. We were opening Tapain, and I remember, like, it was raining every day or snowing. So like Tabane was not very profitable in a sense, you can imagine, with that rain and snow. And we were like there thinking, oh, maybe we should have just like done the pop-up and keep it like as a thing. I think that now I can tell you, thanks to God, we didn't stop, because we opened Grotegrad. And now it's summer, and the paint location like works good for university. And so I think that those are the moments in which like you think you should quit, but if you keep going, things will go farther. You know, I think it's all dedication. Like the most important aspect an entrepreneur for me has to have, it's persistence. Like if you're persistent with things, at one point something will happen, you know? And I don't know, I met a person that proposed me to do something in another continent just because he has been a client of ours for 12 months. If I would have closed in September, I would have never met him. And you can count on how many like people we've met thanks to going farther and not like stopping.
All right, Pepe. We have a closing tradition on this podcast. We asked you to bring an object that was of personal value to you. Do you want to explain what it is and why you brought it?
So I brought this keychain. It's an Amsterdam keychain that I bought, I think, 6 years and a half ago. First time I came to the Netherlands. I went to Amsterdam for an holiday and I bought this keychain. And I didn't know yet that I was gonna study in the Netherlands, but I really like the Netherlands. And I brought this with me saying, once I'm gonna not only move here, but I think that here I could do something. And I brought this with me for the past 6 years and a half. And I look at it as a, I don't know, like it brings me good luck for sure. And I've never lost it. So I really like it. And the most important thing is that I did it all the day with my brother. And it's a younger brother of mine, and when we were there, like that's the first time that for a moment we recalled the idea of selling arancini in the Netherlands. Not out of anything like random, we just took a portion, I think, of bitterball. My brother tried that, he was expecting like a carbohydrate inside, not just a cream. And he said, oh, I don't like it now. I thought it was like a supplì, so a mini supplì, like a mini arancino. And he said to me, oh, but like they sold thousands, tons of this bitterball. Like they eat rice with like most carbo in Asian, like the sushi, every place that does with rice. They like fried stuff as well. Their main specialties, for instance, like bitter bowl for snacks, which is basically like what do we do. And boom, 5 years after, we are sitting to start it. So I think that with my brother, what I also liked about having experiences with him in general, like the one that we did in the Netherlands, is that with him we always want and have wanted to have something together to think of. And Siri was just like a beginning with us, and now also with him we're working towards a new project. So I think that I, thanks to God, made out in the Netherlands. Like I reached the Netherlands and I decided to stay here. And I think that that was like the decision, for instance, not going to Switzerland and staying in the Netherlands, I think that that's a good decision. And people like know, and sometimes people don't understand, that you cannot have tons of opportunities without any downsides. And one downside for me of the Netherlands is basically the weather. And people would ask me, like, how do you live there with the rainy every day? I say, man, because my time is busy. Like, if your time is busy, then yeah, it's raining, but I'm working on something. Like,
perfect. Thank you very much for coming on our podcast.
It was a big pleasure.
Likewise, Pepe, and I think we'll need to have you back on sometime to talk about other projects that you might be cooking up. You're a busy guy, so I know you're always up to something.
That would be lovely, and I love guys always to talk and communicate, and I hope everyone is listening to us, has liked what we have discussed, and I wish you the best.
If people want to find you, Pepe, where can they find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn, Giuseppe Di Rosa, or you can also like pass by one of the shops, of course. Like if I'm there, you will find me for sure for all the European Championship games, especially with the one with Italy. But in any case, you can just find me on LinkedIn. And as I always say to anyone that I've worked with or that I've met, please just send a message. Like I always meet whoever. I like to meet new people. As I said, I'm super curious, not about just things, but also about people. So please come and like, let's have a chat.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Pepe.